the streets of Toronto to the backwoods of Bancroft, here's your Moose Country Minute with Mark Bonikoski.
There was an article recently posted on the Weather Channel's website that stretches what any normal person would believe when it comes to climate change. Why the Weather Channel posted it is therefore baffling. The poster, a meteorologist named Mario Picazzo, says our planet can transition to 100% renewable energy by 2050 at the worldwide cost of $95 trillion, and that the investment would pay for itself in only 7 years. That $95 trillion investment would mean renovating power grids, manufacturing, transportation, as well as other systems to run on wind, solar, and hydropower, including having enough storage capacity to keep the lights on overnight. This implies that the 143 countries responsible for more than 99% of global emissions would buy in, as if they would. It's just a study, of course, but it was launched by the U.S. Democratic Party, currently in the struggle to get a candidate to go up against Donald Trump and also impeach him at the same time. So consider the source. And also consider the claim that once this 100% transition takes place, the world will be rewarded with an annual saving of $14 trillion. By 2050, though, I will either be composting or a dotty 100-year-old, but I suspect it will be the organic fertilizer pushing up a plot of daisies. So I'll believe it when I see it from my grave. Right now, China has scores of electricity plants being fueled by coal because it has 1.4 billion citizens living under a communist regime who are not exactly rolling in the dough, except the billionaires who are tight with the big guy, Xi Jinping. So it's coal or unaffordable electricity. And China, as we see by its actions, couldn't care less about the spewing out of pollution. There is no risk to the academics behind this study, of course, so their conclusions will not cost them their livelihoods or their pensions. If it did, they would not be putting out such an obvious fairy tale. For Outdoor Journal Radio, I'm Mark Bonikoski.
Welcome back to the program, Outdoor Journal, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. I'm Angelo Viola. He is Michael Mooring. Derek Brandeo, Andrew Holland on the board. The B-plus team. You call them B-team. I'm going to give you B-pluses all around.
Okay. All right.
Big hugs
I'll
for the whole team.
Yeah. I'll take it.
Yeah. That little music tells us it's time for some in-house safety, kiddies. Our in-house safety expert. Former OPP Staff Sergeant Bradley Slorf on the line, but he is not venturing out on his snowmobile through the snow in northern Ontario. He is, in fact, probably kicking back under a palm tree down in the Gulf of Mexico. Good morning, Brad. Hello, Brad.
Hello.
Put away the piña colada, buddy. You're on the air.
I started out with my life is kind of like a fairy tale.
Oh, how's that?
I don't know. I just, Mark was talking about fairy tales and trillions of dollars and all that stuff, and I got all caught up in it.
I could just see you getting all caught up down there. How did the fishing go this week? You were heading out, last we spoke, you were going to go out and put on your waders and do some surf casting.
We pounded them.
No. Tell me about it.
Yes. Yes. So we're fishing on the surf. We're catching whiting and pompano and lots of them. So a couple of fish fries this week. Healthy living, the world is good.
Nice. Is there a lot of people fishing in the area that you're in?
Yep. So the island itself, the part we can drive to is 40-some miles long. And we drive about the 10-mile mark up, and there's tons of people fishing on the shore. It depends on the day, but there's lots of people fishing, just standing on the beach, sometimes in their bare feet, and wade out.
That is cool. That is so cool. Yeah. And how's the weather been?
Weather's been good. It's a little cool the last couple of days, but like 68, I think it was.
Oh, you're the best.
There's people wearing long pants, you know.
Yeah, I guess so. Snowmobiling is starting to look like it might be viable this year. Might be. It's still not. Well, the farther north you go, of course, the more that is the case. But I'm talking about the lower third in the province. Snowmobiling is just about ready to get started. And anything you can tell folks that are itching to get going?
Well, so the first thing is that let's start on the grim and then go to the good. The OPP released its 10-year statistics. 175 people on snowmobiles in OPP jurisdiction have been killed or died in snowmobile fatalities. So, and a little proviso in there, that doesn't count the numbers that would be in municipal police agencies. So some of the larger regional police services will have a couple each every year. So there's more people in that. Common denominator, 45% alcohol involved.
Well, that should tell us everything we need to know right there. If I'm going to be a snowmobile rider, driver this year, even if I am a gambling man, I would say, you know what, those odds are pretty much stacked against me. I think I might not drink this year on my snow machine. How's that?
Well, and not surprisingly, because it's a recreational activity, that proportion is still a lot higher than motor vehicle collisions. Now, and, you know, proportionally, like there's a pile more fatal motor vehicle collisions than snowmobile ones, but still, the percentage of people that are choosing to drink and ride is high.
Here's the one I find equally interesting and disturbing, I think, because we have been waving this banner for the better part of two decades here on Outdoor Journal Radio, and that is safety when you are snowmobiling on a frozen water. The pond, the frozen pond, 45% of snowmobile fatalities over this period of time occurred on a frozen lake or river. So almost half. So if you could eliminate, now I'm not suggesting that we do this, but if you could eliminate people crossing rivers and or lakes, you'd eliminate 50% of the fatalities. Or wear the proper safety equipment.
That was going to be my where I was aching to get in there and say that's all. I'll refer to condition reporter number two. So Brian Adkins, my primary source of local information when I need it. But then my son Josh, he was out on Lake Simcoe in the north end ice fishing. Said there was 7 inches of nice blue ice. Didn't take a snowmobile. Decided to walk just to see how it was. But nice blue ice and everything. He wears a floater suit, like a snowmobile floater suit, so it doesn't look like a big orange survival suit like a lot of people think they are. That looks like a high-end snowmobile suit, costs a lot more than my first car. But nevertheless, it's a worthwhile investment, and people are still thinking about that too. Well, you know, it's a big yellow or orange suit. No, there's snowmobile suits. You can walk into a big distributor and look at them. Flotation suits will also help you in terms of hypothermia, and they're as comfortable as a non-floater suit and not very much more money.
See, that one should almost be, to me, if I'm a snowmobiler, that should be a must. A must. My suit that I wear to protect me from the elements must protect me from all elements, including water. Yeah? But that's me. Well, and what do I know?
The beauty of it, and it's the same as we speak about wearing a floater suit on your boat, right? The beauty of them is they protect you from the water that you're not falling in when it's falling out of the sky. So you're out and it's a little wet out. You stay nice and dry and toasty, comfy. Another plus to having that floater suit on.
32% of snowmobile fatalities occur in the month of February. So I was giving this some thought. I thought, I wonder why. Well, obviously, because lately, certainly during the last 10 years, December and January have been a little more on the iffy side in terms of snowmobiling, but February is the month where everybody can have at it. So it would seem to me logical that February would be the month with the most fatalities because there's more snowmobilers out there. Does that make sense, or am I making that up?
Absolutely. Like back in the day, you know, during the ice age when I was the OPP snowmobile coordinator, we did have longer winters, longer riding seasons. So the fatality experience was kind of spread out a bit more. But February tended to be the most deadly month in terms of crashes and stuff like that. But it's the shoulder seasons where it's the crappy ice. And people need to just pay attention to the conditions, too. And everybody's telling you there's no ice out there. Well, don't go and find out for yourself the hard way.
Yeah, no kidding. No kidding.
But you're right. February now is the maybe the 1 month where there's decent snowmobiling in most of the province.
Yeah, and we're right there now. This is it. We're all going to get those snowmobiles out of the garage and dust them off and head out this month. So be extra careful for sure. Do you miss it, Brad, being down south now in the winter? Like, I know you're a big snowmobiler.
Miss what? Well, I do it. Like, I've said since I was a kid, I would rather ice fish than fish any other way that there is, except I can get by with not being freezing cold, dunking my hands into a minnow pail up to my elbow, digging for that last one. Like, yeah, I do miss it. I miss skiing. I miss riding a snowmobile, but I've adapted.
You've adapted very well, my friend. What else you got for us?
Well, just when we're staying on the February thing, I hope the fact that it's a leap year and we get one more day doesn't mean that we get one more fatal in February this year in a snowmobile.
Well, that's a good point. I never even thought of that. We do have an extra day this year, don't we?
We do.
All righty, buddy. I will cut you free, cut you loose. Go back. Are you fishing this week again? Of course you are.
I'm looking at the palm tree across the canal right now. It's not moving very much, so I might get motivated out to the beach shortly.
Hey, did you see that? Because I know you're also a big internet guy. Did you see that grouper that was caught this past? Well, it was certainly, I don't know whether it was caught this past week, but it was posted this week. That 350-pound giant, and it's not a Goliath grouper. It's a what they call a Warsaw grouper, but caught at 600 feet. Did you see how remarkably similar to a largemouth bass it looks?
Looks exactly like it, only he didn't want to reach down there and lip it and try and pull it into the boat.
Oh, my God. I can't even imagine fighting something like that from that depth. I've been on the business end of a rod with Pacific halibut that weighed, you know, in that 220-pound range, and pulling them up out of 300 feet. But 350 pounds of what I'll call a giant bass at 600 feet in depth, I cannot even imagine what that would entail in terms of stress levels.
How deep were you guys fishing when you went on the big Nova Scotia tuna tour?
Oh, those were shallow, buddy. Those fish, those tuna, we caught several in that 800 to 1,000 pound range, and we were fishing. The fish were caught almost on the surface. But we were fishing over 300 feet of water, I think it was. But they were on the surface. Like, these are porpoising tuna that you can see off in the horizon, and they're feeding on big, humongous balls of mackerel and herring and stuff. And so they're right on the surface. That's how you find them. That's the pattern to fish with for those things. You just look for birds that are feeding on the surface, and boof, there's the tuna. So yeah, shallow. No problem at all. I couldn't imagine trying to drag in a 1,000-pound tuna from 600 feet, that's for sure, if that's what you're asking.
My whole experience is watching Wicked Tuna on TV, so I'm eating it out of a can.
Yeah. I got you, buddy. All right, listen, you have yourself a wonderful week down there.
Take care.
We'll talk to you next week. Our in-house safety expert, Bradley Schlorf, retired Staff Sergeant with the OPP, now playing it safe on Outdoor Journal Radio.